Good morning, everyone. Glad to have you all out with us, and I hope that you'll open up your Bibles and follow along. And it's good to see the Shonks back after a little absence there and cold and sickness and everything, so glad to have you back out as well. I am glad also to hear Tom's thoughts about how he can show himself a little better to be my friend, and we'll finish up on that later on. We'll just kind of keep working on it, but we have the opportunity today and start the first day of a new year to introduce our theme for this upcoming year, the year that we're in, 2023, and that is what is on the board behind me. And so once a month, the sermons will be directed back towards this topic, and that is qualities of kingdom people. And it's everything to do with what Brother Ray read for us there in those first 12 verses of Matthew chapter 5, that Sermon on the Mount. And so I hope as we develop this, you'll see more aspects of it, and I hope that it will be as useful to you as what it is already becoming to me. So in Matthew chapter 5, if you would turn there with me, qualities of kingdom people. What specifically today we're going to be looking at, it is time to take your place. Time to take your place. So after saying, blessed are the poor, verse 3, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the gentle, those who hunger after thirst, hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers, and those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness. In verse 12, he says as follows, rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So verse 12 will be our focus today. And the question is why? Why verse 12? Because verse 12, I mean, it's a good verse. But what's that have to do really with anything, this idea that the prophets were before us? Because everything in verses 3 through 11 points to verse 12. That's the result. That is where we are headed. A question for you. Who were these people that Jesus was speaking to here in this Sermon on the Mount? Who assembled there? Who came out to hear him? Who was the audience of Jesus? Who did he take his message to first and primarily? Well, let's go over to the book of Luke. So just hold your finger here. But let's go over to the book of Luke, the fourth chapter, and verse 18. The answer for us is this. Luke chapter 4, and beginning in verse 18. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. This was the prophecy about who the Messiah was going to be going to. The Messiah would go to the poor. Would go to the sick, and to the needy, and to the outcast. Would be preaching the gospel to the tax collectors, the prostitutes, and those with incurable diseases. In other words, Jesus was going to take his message first and foremost and primarily to those that would have been of low status. Those who we might call low class of their society. So I ask you, if you wanted to start a business, you want to start a club or a social movement, who would you start with? Who would you take your message to first, foremost, and primarily? Well, generally, if you're wanting to get something started, you want to start with people who can help you get it going, right? You would probably take it to someone that could maybe help you financially underwrite the process. Maybe you would take it to people who are well connected so they can kind of grease the wheels that are necessary to kind of get whatever enterprise you have up and off the ground. It wouldn't hurt to have someone with a degree. you would probably go to people who are well-connected, well-liked, well-known. That would be helpful. You know how many commercials are put out there with people that don't really know anything about it, but because of name, likeness, and image, they know something about football, and so we listen to them about what car to drive. They know something about acting, and so we listen to them about investing. You ever think about that? What do they actually know? And with the whole crypto fall apart, bankruptcy thing, there's a number of those actors and athletes who promoted that stuff, and now they're getting sued personally for the people they helped induce to come in and jump on board with some of that stuff. But I dare say, this is a common formula if we're trying to get something up and off the ground. We want to get to that target audience, someone with resources and connections, those who can connect us to the people we need to be connected to. We want to rub elbows with them and have them promote what we're up to. The notable, the wealthy, the famous. Do you realize today there's a whole industry around being an influencer? Whole industry developed around that. Millionaires are being made because they use that product. Well, at least they did for their 5-minute TikTok. But the influencers. So we understand this. But what you need to understand about Jesus is he essentially did the opposite of all of that. He went exactly backwards with all of that. He pulled an Elijah, where he built the altar and he flooded the whole thing with water, so much so that the trench around it was filled up, to make it look almost impossible. It shouldn't work. That's what he did with his methodology of getting this kingdom up and going. From every business standpoint, he did everything exactly wrong. Now, given that, because he started with people who did not have worldly possessions, they did not have fame, they did not have connections, given this, people would not be attracted to them naturally. No one was naturally going to be attracted to a Lazarus to listen to a man covered in sores, laying at a man's gate, begging for food. No one is going to naturally be attracted to him. But how many of us in this room have sat at the feet of Lazarus and learned some real serious lessons from him? Right? And it had nothing to do with him physically. That was all wrong. But we learned something from his spirit, from his faith, from his confidence. And it tells a kind of story that says that Lazarus is someone to be listened to. Does that make sense? Jesus is well aware of this, that there's nothing about this group of people that's going to attract you to them naturally. You're not going to listen to them because of their wealth, not because of their status. You will not defer to them on the basis of trying to curry favor with them because they can do something for you. It's not because of their looks, wealth, status, prestige, position, connections. On and on. It won't be because of those things. People would be attracted to them. Listen to a blind man or a formerly leprous man or a prostitute or a tax collector would be attracted to and listen to and give them the time of day because, verse 16, Matthew chapter 5, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your dirty clothes, leprous body, blindness, poverty. What? Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. You see, people would not be attracted or listen to them or give them the time of day based upon who they were, their status, their wealth, their fame. But they would because of those good works, and as a result, they would glorify God who is in heaven. Let's go to Romans chapter 10 and look at verse 15. Romans 10, verse 15. In verse 15, how will they preach unless they're sent? Ragtag group of people that they are. How will they preach unless they're sent? Just as it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news of good things. They were not beautiful people from human eyes. But they had beautiful feet because as ragtag as what they were as far as this world's goods. Remember when Peter said, gold and silver, I don't have. What I do have, I now share with you. And what a wonderful gift that was, right? What made their feet beautiful? Not because they were models, but it's because they brought good news of good things. I want you to note 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Paul just needs to lay something out for these Corinthian brethren who unfortunately are starting to feel pretty rich and pretty wealthy and kind of having need of nothing, kind of like the Laodiceans just a bit here. Probably not that far advanced, but in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, beginning in verse 26, he wants them to consider where they came from. For consider your calling, brethren, that there are not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. And the base things of the world and the despised, he's talking about them. They're the base, they're the despised, they're the social outcast. And he's chosen these to teach the world something. Let's go to Acts chapter 4. In Acts chapter 4, here verse 13. Now as they observed the confidence of Peter and John and understood that they were uneducated and untrained men, not many noble, not many wise, uneducated and untrained, they were amazed and began to recognize them as having been with Jesus. They were not impressed with their training. They were not impressed with their education, but they were impressed. The gentle, humble spirit, the commitment that they had to a cause, how it is they responded to the insults and to the aggression that was shown to them, to the work that they're doing. And that, when they saw that, they saw Jesus in them. They recognized them as having been with Jesus, meaning they saw Jesus in them. That's a successful day. That's a good day. We've done well today. All right. To build his kingdom his way, that is, with poor, outcast, and the lowly, those people, since people are not going to be attracted to them naturally, those people had to exhibit a specific set of qualities. And that is what verses 3 through 11 in Matthew 5 are all about. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Those qualities, exhibiting that, good works from that kind of good heart, that teaches a lesson. People are attracted to that. The wisdom from heaven says, people will listen to a message delivered by the poor and the outcast if the outcast are poor in spirit, mourn over sin, are gentle, merciful, pure in heart, peacemakers, handle insults and persecutions well. People will listen to a message that comes from a heart and actions like that. Truth and world-changing power in that package is going to be listened to and will be accepted by a lot of people, like 3,000 on day one. It works. Let's go to Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2 and verse 44. And all those who had believed were together and had all things in common. Do you hear that? Meek, gentle spirit. They were together, had all things in common. Mourning over sin. Poor in spirit. Not claiming anything that is their own, as their own. Not this haughty, lofted up kind of attitude. And they began selling their property and possessions, were sharing with them all as anyone might have need. Day by day, continue with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, the commitment to sharing, the loving, the caring, the actions, the good works that come from a good heart. They're taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God, and this is very descriptive to show us that it works, and having favor with all the people. And the Lord is adding to their number day by day those who are being saved. Bottom line, it works. Now, when you do this, we need to go back to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. When they did this, when we do this, I have something very exciting to tell you, and it's in verse 12. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. Now listen, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. The prophets who were before you. What's he saying to them? When you live this out, you are now cut from the same cloth as the prophets. More specifically, you're serving the same master in the same overall mission as the prophets. Consider the impact of him putting them into the same category as the prophets. Jesus, in this Sermon on the Mount, is surrounded by and is talking to a group of nobodies. The world considered them to be nobodies. And what Jesus just did for this group of nobodies is to elevate them to somebodies in God's sight. So in the days to come, when because they followed Jesus and went from here to there, and you're not one of them too, are you? And if someone said, you know, we're getting persecuted for this simple message of repentance, that doesn't seem right. Another somebody can say, well, yeah, that's what they always do to prophets. in the days ahead where they go on these missionary journeys at their own expense and leave businesses and families and things behind to go do that. And someone says, you know, we're really not getting anything out of this as far as a paycheck goes. As a matter of fact, I'm getting more broke as we go. Another somebody can say, that's kind of the way of a prophet, but there's great reward at the end of all this. A message that is right, powerful, and truth, but not always readily accepted. That's what prophets did. Service that is costly, but with enormous long-term, dare I say, eternal benefits. That's what prophets run into. He says, you all, by coming into this, you're just like the prophets who are before you. So the things that they were about to endure and to experience, they were not strange. They were not unheard of. As a matter of fact, the path that they are about to walk has already been well worn by the prophets who have come before them. Let's go over and look in James, the 5th chapter, verse 10. James 5, verse 10. He says, as an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke the name of the Lord. If ever you need a quick lesson on, is it oddball and weird and just wrong that followers of Christ suffer? He says, well, if you want to know if followers of God ever suffer, go check out the prophets. No, it's not unheard of. It's not right, but it's not unheard of. Well, I think, you know what? In this town, there's just about as many of us as there are of them. let's kind of go back after them. Well, as an example of patience, let's go check out the prophets. Because like Jesus, when suffering, they uttered no threats. This is not strange. It's not unheard of. As a matter of fact, this path that Jesus is calling these people in the Sermon on the Mount to come and walk with him, it's a well-worn path. The prophets had already been where they are going. And Jesus is saying to them, the prophets have already been where you are about to go. And you honor those prophets. You respect those prophets. You appreciate those prophets. And those prophets have been glorified. And according to verse 12, so you will be too. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. You see, they are examples of suffering and affliction and patience and reward. Let's look at this. The Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 3, verses 6 through 7. Ephesians chapter 3, verses 6 through 7. First time I ever discovered this, it just really set my mind in a whole different direction. I was so impressed to see this, and I want to share it with you. Verses 6 to 7. To be specific, that the Gentiles are fellow heirs and fellow members of the body and fellow partakers of the promise in Christ Jesus through the gospel, of which I was made a minister. So he's made a minister, right? You got that part? He was made a minister according to the gift of God's grace. Paul says he has the ability to be a minister as a result of God's grace. A guy that was beat up, chased around, thrown in prison, all sorts of things, left for dead. And he says, my ability to do that work is a matter of God's grace. Because you know what? If God had wanted to on the road to Damascus, rather than blinding him and putting him to his knees, could have turned into a pile of ash. Could have. He really could have. But he saw a useful, chosen instrument, and he brought him into service. And there's been a lot of us in this room who have walked some pretty dark, ugly paths. And we could have been abandoned, rejected, and thrown out, and God could have been done with us. Or he could have put out a gospel call that was for all, and he could wash you up and clean you up, justify you, and bring you into service, also as a matter of his grace. Paul says, my service is a matter of God's grace. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, let's keep talking about Paul here for a moment. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and in verse 7, he says, because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason I kept to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger from Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I implored the Lord three times that it might leave me, and he has said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I would rather boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. His ministry was a matter of God's grace. It's hard. This ministry was hard. But God had extended to him grace sufficient to do the work. Whatever the ministry called for, whatever the job called for, God, who gave the grace to come into the ministry, gave a sufficient amount of grace to do the ministry. And finally, staying with Paul, in 2 Timothy chapter 4, beginning verse 6, for I am already poured out as a drink offering. The time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me, grace. Award me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Grace to bring someone into the ministry. Grace sufficient to do the ministry. And at the end of it, a crown as a matter of grace. Rejoice, for your reward in heaven is great. They are being called, like the prophets, to be an example of suffering, affliction, and patience, and to receive the reward that's at the end of it. Of Isaiah, he says that he was mocked line upon line. Elisha was mocked for his bald head. All the prophets were treated that way. Prophets, servants, and saints do hard things and are given grace sufficient to do those hard things, and are given a crown of glory at the end of it, also as a matter of God's grace. Grace allows us in. Grace sees us through. Grace crowns us with glory at the conclusion of it all. And the question I have for you this morning, will you come and take your place as they are being called to take theirs? They were told that the prophets were simply before them. And now that well-worn path of the prophets was theirs to walk. The invitation and the opportunity is still present.